This is the Preparedness Radio Network, preparing you for natural and man-made disasters, helpful tips on gardening and homesteading. Be prepared and remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.
If everything you eat comes out of boxes stored in your freezer, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo. If you're afraid to take out your own garbage because the neighbor kids might beat you up, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
Over 50 free training classes are coming to the Self-Reliance Expo at the Hickory Convention Center Friday, September 14th and Saturday, September 15th. Gardening, alternative home building, off-grid living, food preservation, cooking with the sun, self-defense classes, canine demos, and more.
If you can kill a houseplant just by looking at it, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
This event is fun for the whole family and is the largest of its kind in the nation. Learn how to do it yourself. Learn how to defend yourself. Save money. Save a life.
If the only screwdriver you own is made of orange juice and vodka, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
It's the Self-Reliance Expo at the Hickory Convention Center, Friday, September 14th and Saturday, September 15th. Go to selfrelianceexpo.com for information and tickets.
Hi, this is J. Stephen Stoller for Backwoods Home Magazine. If you like the program you're listening to right now, consider subscribing to Backwoods Home Magazine. Call 1-800-835-2418 or go to www.backwoodshome.com and click on the subscribe button. Every issue of Backwoods Home Magazine is over 100 pages, packed with solid self-reliance advice by experts who tell you how to survive in these unpredictable times. Call 1-800-835-2418.
Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dried guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dried guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every Meat Eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus Meat Eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the freeze-dry guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
BHM Radio is on the air on the Preparedness Radio Network. BHM Radio is the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine, expanding the stories you love in print live across the net. And now, your hosts for BHM Radio, Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci.
Hey, hey, hey. Welcome to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed with Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci. How are you doing this morning, Colorado?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You're coming to us via remote, huh?
Yeah. I'm a little remote this morning, so I had some family obligations down here in Denver that I needed to be here for. So I'll be here, but I'm mobile.
That's okay. It was funny. On Facebook this morning, I actually posted a thing from Webster's Dictionary saying overcommitment, and you know, with the term. And so it's funny that you're kind of doing that because it's kind of like I'm in the same boat. We're both, you know, both of us are leaving on Monday for the Hickory, North Carolina show, and I'm like, I have 3 hours to do on radio this morning, which ends at noon for me. I have like a dozen commitments this afternoon and tomorrow to all get done before I leave, as well as, you know, making sure everything, I haven't forgotten anything on my list. And it's because, you know, I'm going to be gone for 5 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And and you know, there's all these things coming up and all this other stuff. And I was just like, as I was looking at my list that keeps growing and growing, I was just like, you know, I never learned the word of the definition of overcommitment, obviously, because this is just way too heavy. And obviously, you're kind of the same way. Every time I turn around, you've got like another three things that you have to get done.
Yeah, it's a lot, but you know, what do you do? I mean, if we didn't, I guess we'd be bored. You'd be out there staring at chickens laying eggs all day.
Did you see that this morning? Yeah. So for those of you guys who hadn't checked out my Facebook this morning, you know, I was out feeding my chickens, and I actually saw, as I opened up and I was cleaning up the chicken coop and everything else, I got to watch one of my chickens actually lay the egg. And every two or three times a week, I do this thing called Bubba Ponder. And it's just, you know, those wild things that not just me, but everybody thinks about, you know, it's like, you know, why does this happen or why do we say this? And I was kind of looking and I was like, okay, Bubba Ponder for the day. Who the heck watched a chicken poop out an egg and decided, oh, this is what I want to eat? Or what, you know, this is probably good to eat. Because it was the most disturbing sight I had ever seen. And it was just kind of like, I had planned an egg breakfast for this morning, and I just said, you know something, I'm having toast.
Toasted coffee this morning.
Yeah, toasted coffee, that's what it was. I don't know. I mean, it's funny. I guess it's good to realize where your food comes from. You just don't realizing where your food comes from and actually seeing it come from there, I guess, are two completely different things, because it was something I really didn't need to see.
Especially right before breakfast.
Exactly. So how's everything going for you? Are you all set to head to Hickory?
I am. I pretty much took yesterday off and just concentrated on getting all the little things done that I needed to. So, you know, finished up getting contracts signed, checks sent out, you know, running some honeydew errands, those types of things, and just got everything done and ready to go. I'm going to leave about 6 a.m. on Monday. So,
yeah, it's about when I leave. Live.
Yeah.
And
so you'll be just ahead of me.
Yeah, I was looking today. It depends on how many stops I make along the way, because I've got a trailer loaded with about 3,000 pounds worth of other people's product. But it's listed as about a 19-hour drive for me without stops. So it'll be interesting to see how long it actually takes.
Yeah.
Hey, and what's it for you? I assume it's probably like 23, 24 for you, right?
Yeah. It looks like it came in about 23 and a half hours is what it looks like. So I think I'm going to try and drive to – I'm trying to get to St. Louis by Monday night, and then St. Louis to Hickory by Tuesday night.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, that's a little more than halfway, I would assume. So we've got a really packed show today. We're going to talk briefly here in a few minutes with a person who is new to us. Her name is Melissa Williams, and Melissa Williams is part of the Appleseed Project. She's a new rifleman and instructor for Appleseed. And, you know, we will have Jim and Kim Heath, who is our main contacts and our good friends at the show also. But Melissa is going to be doing the setting up of the camp area, and I'll let her talk a little bit more about it. But it's one of the interesting things about her is she is a DARE member, which is Daughters of the American Revolution, and they do all the reenactment from the 18th century, and if I understand it correctly, which is why I wanted to have her on, she is going to be setting up an authentic 18th century camp as part of it. That's pretty cool.
Oh, wow. That'll be fascinating. I'd love to see that. I can't wait to see something like that.
And then right after that, we'll take a quick commercial break, and then we will have Matt Morehouse on here. Now, Matt and his wife, Linda, we've had Linda on before, and Linda and Matt have a book, wrote a book called Cast Iron Cuisine. And it was actually one of the first people we had on our show when we launched our show. And he's also a contributing author to Backwoods Home Magazine. And we're going to be talking to him about his adventures in bread making. Because, you know, it's kind of funny. Bread making has been on the news recently, and everybody on Facebook has been commenting on making bread and doing things. And I'm wondering if it's because the prices for wheat have gone up so much that people are looking at doing the stuff at home. So we'll be talking to him, and then we'll be closing out the hour and talking about who will be speaking at the event in just 5 days. Scott, it's hard to believe. So, hey, I'm being told by Steve that that Melissa is here. So let's go ahead and get Melissa on. Melissa,
hello.
Welcome
hello.
To the show.
Hi there.
How are you? Oh, listen to that. She got that Southern accent. I love that Southern accent.
Well, I can't help it. I started out in Atlanta.
So a true Southern belle, huh?
Well, somewhat, yes. My dad was Air Force, and I've lived in went to high school in Omaha, Nebraska, and I lived in Spain, and you know how it is when you're an Air Force brat. So I have a funny accent, I think.
Yeah, no.
Unless I've been in the South too long.
So, we got an email from Jim and Kim Heath and said that you're going to be coming over and helping us at the Hickory, North Carolina event. And
yes, I'm looking forward to it.
And one of the things they told us was you are a new rifleman and instructor.
Yes, sir, and I am proud to be. When I found the program, I couldn't get involved fast enough. I'm in DAR, which is Daughters of the American Revolution, and certainly believe in the history of this country. And I just thought Appleseed was incredible. So in spite of the July heat and the August heat, at my age, I went ahead and went to Appleseed and was determined. And finally, after much grief and sweat, I scored a 235 on the AQT, which is the Army Qualifying Test. It's what a lot of the troops have to qualify on, and I was pretty proud of that. So, yeah, I'm on my way.
So, you know, how long did it take you to get your rifleman and instructor certification?
Well, the first Appleseed I went to was a ladies' seed, ladies only, so it was a little bit slower pace. I had not shot a rifle in probably 30 years, so I had much to learn. I didn't even know how to put the rounds in the magazine, so I'm talking, I didn't have a clue. I'm okay with handguns, but... anyway, I went to another Appleseed 2 weeks later, and it was all men. I was the only woman there and one of the oldest. And after much effort, and on Sunday, I was told I was trying too hard to chill out. I got a little lecture about trying too hard, and so on the last AQT of the whole weekend, I scored a 235, so I did it. I set a goal, and I did it, but I had excellent teaching. They actually assigned a couple of instructors, one on Saturday, to kind of coach me one-on-one to help me with controlling my breathing and my NPOA, which is natural point of aim. And I think that personal instruction really, really made the difference. So, I'm an orange hat level one now already.
Well, that's pretty impressive.
Oh, wow.
I went to an Appleseed this past weekend. We had a huge group of families with, you know, children as young as 10. And I was able to call the line and do some of the things that I have to do and got promoted. So I'm moving up the ranks quickly. I think it's because they need women in North Carolina to be instructors. So I'm game. I will go as often as they'll let me go.
Very cool. So I was just told by Steve that we also have Kim Heath that just jumped on. Morning, Kim.
Good morning. Good morning. Jim's supposed to call in also.
Okay, wonderful.
Hi, Kim.
Hi, Melissa. Yeah, we need women instructors all over, not just North Carolina.
So, Kim, you know, I was just doing this. This is your seventh. North Carolina will be your seventh event with us. Are you getting tired
really?
Of traveling? Are you getting tired of doing all that driving around?
It's hard on us, and our car's not liking it much. you know, we did another show just a week ago or so in Las Vegas, and we dragged into Las Vegas needing car repairs and replaced universal joints. You know, we're pulling a trailer too, and it's just tough on that car. And then on the way home, the air conditioning quit, so we've replaced a compressor, and it's like, what's going to break down this time? We enjoy the shows. The traveling is hard, but we absolutely enjoy the shows.
Yeah, and we appreciate you all coming. So, you know, and I'm battling the same thing, which is, you know, the old truck that I use to haul everything around is just went through maintenance. And after 2 days of driving there and 2 days of driving back, I'm sure there's going to be a whole lot more that has to be done when I get back.
Yes. Yes, I understand completely.
So, ladies,
y'all are
ask
scaring
you...
me. I'm getting a motorhome next week. Y'all are making me nervous.
Oh,
yeah, you're driving less than an hour, aren't you?
That's correct.
Yeah. So let me ask you, ladies, what's going to be? We got some interesting things going on. We're going to have the typical shooting area there, but you're adding something new to the booth that. That we haven't seen in the past. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
I saw Melissa's bio on the forum, and she explained that she was a daughter of the American Revolution, and she did reenactment and did different ceremonies, and that she was going to be there at Hickory in her outfit. And so I started thinking, what if she could set up a camp with us? So I asked her, and she agreed that she will set up a camp, just another thing to draw people in and interesting and educational. And so she can describe the camp that she's going to set up.
Well, it's still in the forming stages. I've located an authentic canvas tent, although we have no way to drive the stakes in the ground. I'm going to have to think of maybe framework for that, but... I've got my tripod and my cast iron cookware, and I thought I would set that up and with a little maybe fake campfire. And I've got a few pet chickens and a few rabbits. The kids sing when I do the what we call living history out at Rural Hill. The kids are so drawn to the animals, and I thought it might be fun for them because there are some of those city kids that do not know what a chicken looks like or where eggs come from, and so I give them a little lesson about that. But and I managed to come across some really cute fake pigs, and I'm going to have them with me too. So it should be fun. I'm trying to get another reenactor to join me. There's one gentleman that is an antique weapon expert. I mean, he actually has a reproduction of the Ferguson rifle. He knows more about guns than anyone I've ever seen in my life, and I haven't got a confirmation from him yet, but I thought it would be awesome for him to bring along some of his historic guns to share with people if that's possible. I do have a replica of a brown Bess, and then I found out that I should have gotten a flintlock instead, so whatever, I might have to get one of those too, but we're going to make it as authentic as we can and try to share Revolutionary War history with people so that they can understand that this country was founded on blood, sweat, and much sacrifice. And
well, that's very cool. I mean, and you know, now one of the things that I also read in your bio was you had three family members that fought in the Battle of King Mountain. Is that true?
That's correct. I had two that were colonial patriots. My maiden name is Mooney. It was Richard Mooney and Martin Mooney. And then one that actually was a loyalist and was aide-de-camp to Patrick Ferguson. His name was Elias Powell. And when Patrick Ferguson was killed up on that mountain, he's the one that wrapped him in a raw beef hide and buried him up there. And his grave is up there with a huge cairn of stones. I think they piled it on thick so that he couldn't come out of there. But just amazing, amazing history. After my mother died 4 years ago, I started researching family history and wondered why in the world was this not shared with me. So, you know, a lot of people, if they'll just go back and look, will be amazed what they find if their family has been here that long. They can go to dar.org and put in a family name, and it should be in the database.
I think that's very cool. I mean, and then people who don't know, there's still a town called Kings Mountain in North Carolina. When I was stationed in North Carolina at Fort Bragg, I went up there a couple of times, and that's amazing history, because that is, first of all, Davy Crockett's father fought in that battle, if I remember correctly. But
yes, and Daniel Morgan, who everyone knows, was the most incredible marksman that ever was.
Right, and the other interesting thing about it was that the Patriot soldiers, it was the first time that really put Lord Cornwallis and everybody on notice, because they gave, like, no quarter to the Loyalist military. I mean, they were, you know, which is in that time, you know, officers weren't shot, and, you know, and they, soldiers were given full quarter when the battle was lost. And that wasn't the case in this battle, and it really kind of showed
it really showed the
British military, the Loyalist military, that the Patriots were playing a completely different game.
Exactly. Well, they were marksmen; they had to be to survive. To shoot game for their family, to feed their families, and then particularly the Overmountain men who had been on the other side of the Appalachians, regularly fighting Indians to survive. And they walked for 2 weeks to King's Mountain to participate in that battle. And I truly believe that they and their skills, that battle only lasted for an hour and 10 minutes, but they really turned the battle. Patrick Ferguson, I understand, covered his red jacket with a checkered shirt so they wouldn't know who it was. And he had captured two women up there, one that was killed right away. The other one escaped and told the colonials that he had covered his red shirt with a checkered jacket, and that's how they knew who he was, and they shot and killed him up there. So the history is really amazing. On October 7th every year, there's a commemoration of the Battle of Kings Mountain. It's a huge turnout. The Sons of the American Revolution are there, most of them in their period 18th century uniforms. Some of the DAR come out, but I'm the docent for our chapter, so I do come out in my period clothing, and I lay the wreath for our chapter. So anyone that would like to participate, they need to get up there about 9 o'clock in the morning at Kings Mountain State Park for the commemoration. It's well worth the trek up the mountain. It's about a mile and a half to the top of the mountain.
Very cool, very cool. I hear Jim's live with us now, too. Good morning, Jim.
Well, hi there, sir.
How are you today?
I'm doing pretty well, thank you.
Good, good, good. You got that vehicle all ready? Because I don't want Kim to have to push it the rest of the way to Hickory.
Well, yeah, we're getting darn close. Got a new tire on the trailer yesterday, so hopefully that's good. And got our air conditioner fixed because it quit coming back from Las Vegas. And, yeah, so I think we're ready.
Okay. So we were just talking with the ladies about what's going to be happening at the event, and Melissa was giving us some background history on her family and Black Mountain, which I think is very interesting.
Kings Mountain.
I'm sorry, Kings Mountain. I apologize.
Correct. That's
right. Jim, you know, what from your perspective? I mean, how has your booth evolved since you started coming to these events almost a year and a half ago?
Well, the first one, you were kind enough to give us a 10x10 booth, and that was in Denver. And from there, now we're have a, boy, what is it, 20x70 or something like that?
Just about,
again, you're very generous in letting us use that space. And we have pellet guns. We have... now we'll have a, I guess we're going to have a rabbit and chicken. I don't know what we're...
Maybe more than one or two, yeah.
Wow. So we'll have some food for everyone. That'll be new. And I hear there might be
a...
We might be able to borrow one of the sun ovens. I'm not sure. And we can... Anyway, that would just be wrong. But yeah, so...
Yeah.
So we shoot pellet guns. A lot of your vendors, and especially your kids, really like our pellet gun line. I think, well, Ron, are your kids going to be there this time?
Yeah, I'm bringing the two oldest boys with me. Everybody else is staying here. Now that we have quail and rabbit and all this other stuff, we got commitments here at the house now.
Well, I hear you can bring those with you.
No.
Okay. Well, anyway, so I'm sure we'll see them a few times during the weekend when you're not keeping them busy. But, yeah, we shoot pellet guns. We're talking with people all the time for lots of good reasons. We are a very busy booth. We let kids as young as long as they can sit there and not cry, they can shoot our pellet guns. Even if they cry a little bit, that's okay. And we've had folks in wheelchairs, people who couldn't get down on the floor. They had to sit in a chair or stand. That's okay. Whole families. We've had families of five shooting with us, mom and dad, and I guess three kids. That would add up to five. And we just have a good time there, and we make lots of good contacts, and hopefully we have a chance to encourage folks to come to an Appleseed and get involved in the representative government that we have.
That's very cool. And how many guns will you have on the line this time?
How many do you want? We're planning on five.
Okay. It's kind of funny. It's hard to remember from show to show. Now, the last show you had a narrower booth, so you didn't have as many weapons up. But
we still squeezed five people in.
Yeah, we
did. You really?
Yes, we just got cozy.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. And the goal here is you're going to have the thought process was you guys will have the theoretical, the camp set up on one end and then the range on the other, right?
It would work best that way.
Yeah, you don't want to put the chickens at the end,
so that way they have something to shoot at.
I was thinking what we could do is sprinkle a little bit of feed along the pellet, the target line, and get that chicken to walk back and forth.
I think that is really bad. That is so bad. You want me to leave my animals at home?
I wouldn't harm your. I'm sure it's a loving pet that.
These are my pets. Don't be putting them in the chicken pot yet.
Not yet.
So Melissa, you're just getting a little bit of Jim's humor.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I also wanted to put a plug in for our Appleseed that's coming up in Charlotte the end of September, the 29th, down in near Waxhaw. It's the Charlotte Gun and Pistol Range, and we're going to have an Appleseed weekend.
Oh, that's awesome.
In Charlotte. We haven't had one here in a while, so it would be nice to get that information out.
We're happy to go ahead and put it out there. And what about you, Kim and Jim? What's your next Appleseed in Colorado? Although you're never back.
Our next one when we get back will be Rama, which is east of Colorado Springs, October 6th and 7th. That's actually our home range. The next weekend we have someone doing a Brighton shoot, which is outside of Denver. The next one's Leadville. We'll be in Leadville, over 10,000 feet in the middle of October, so that's going to be chilly. And then there's a fountain shoot the last weekend of October. But we'll be at your expo in Arizona.
Very cool. Yeah, you're jumping to a lot of expos. How was Las Vegas?
It was
good.
We'll be nice. It was a small fraction of the attendance that they were advertising. But we made some good contacts there. We are gracious and appreciative that they donated space for us for the pellet line. So we made good things happen there, despite low attendance.
Yeah, well, it's hard, especially with this economy, to get people to – I always worry about Vegas. I mean, and I heard this gentleman put a lot of planning and everything else into it, and people always go, well, you guys are competitors of these shows. There is no competitors in preparedness. You know, we're all trying to get a message out there, and so, you know, we encourage anybody to go to any preparedness show you can. I don't think people have the money to necessarily travel to Las Vegas right now to go to these sorts of conventions. I've heard several of them have had lackluster, not just preparedness, But I have a couple people that have done gun shows and things like that that said that the numbers really haven't been there in Vegas recently.
I'm at the Charlotte Prep Gun down here near Charlotte in Fort Mill today, helping a friend out, and I'm surprised it's not a very big turnout. Of course, I haven't been to one before, but it doesn't seem like a huge crowd to me.
Yeah, well, like I said, it's a lot of people are cutting back on where they think they need to, and that makes it sometimes a little bit difficult. But I'm glad the message is getting out there, Kim and Jim. I'm glad that you were able to go out there and make something happen. That's good.
Yes.
And
we still talk with probably 2,000 people. So
wow, that's pretty good. That's a good event.
It was most of the attendees, but we still talk with them. So from our point of view, it was great.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
We just hit a much higher percentage of the attendees.
That's right. So.
And I'm kind of surprised. You know, PrepCon. Don't you have James Rawls speaking at this event?
He's actually speaking via.
Yeah, he always does everything via remote. Via
taken, whatever. Yeah, he's supposed to be speaking, and I mean, there's some good speakers here, but I'm just surprised it's not a bigger crowd than it is. At this point, maybe it'll pick up, but it isn't right now.
Yeah, and I think I might be wrong, but isn't Doc Bones and Nurse Amy are out there? Joe and Amy are out there.
That's correct. That's right.
And Survivor Mom, I believe, is out there. He's also a good friend of ours. Is this the one that Southern Prepper One puts on?
No. This is one of his friends actually puts on, and he said that. There's just a lot of these types of events starting to pop up, and I think that part of the problem is the Carolinas are kind of getting a little saturated there with a bunch of these little ones, and that's why they tend to.
Well, anyway, we hope the event is good, and they do good things out there, and so.
Well, we're recovering from the DNC. You know, it just about shut the whole town down. So this is our first day of recovery. I think everybody left yesterday, and maybe by next week, Charlotte, we'll be back to normal again. But most roads were closed off and parts of town closed off. It was quite a event.
Scott? Yes, sir.
You mentioned Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy. They were also at Las Vegas, and they got to meet Fred, who started Appleseed, and between the show they're doing this weekend and your show next weekend, they had a week off, so Fred invited them to go shooting with him, and hopefully they'll be able to do that.
Awesome.
Because
that's a home range.
Unlike some folks, they actually do go shooting and don't just talk about signing up for Appleseed, and then at the last minute decide that they've got something better to do.
Okay. Listen to this.
I hope that hurt both of you.
Yeah, I think the gauntlet was thrown. Well, get Fred to come and say hi to us, considering we're the ones that have given you guys space for a year and a half.
Oh, now it's coming back, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah. He will be there. He's going to be there in Las Vegas. He spent 2 days with us for the 3-day show, and he worked the pellet line and talked to people, and he was just like any of us working.
And so he will be at Hickory also working.
All right. Well, if he actually shows up and he does that and he invites us, I will make sure that we do a detour. Although, I was joking with everybody. I'm on the road 5 weeks after this show. And I will find a time in between those 5 weeks to go out there if he invites. Where is the home range before I make this commitment?
Yeah. Over commitment.
Yeah, it's in Ramsar, North Carolina, just south of Asheboro.
Okay. I will go ahead and make sure I get out there.
On a more, an absolutely serious note, we have decided that if we can figure it out at one of these shows, we would love to do an Appleseed for all the vendors at the Self-Reliance Expo.
That's a great
idea.
We'd love to do an Appleseed for all the vendors at the Self-Reliance Expo.
That would
and
be
we're
cool.
We're not sure how that would work out. And anybody else who wanted to come. I mean, if there were, so for the vendors and their families, and like I say, I'm not sure how we can work that out, but we'll give you we'll talk with you and see if we can do something like that and see if you can have fun.
I think we have one more show this year, and Arizona is a great state to do something like that in. It is a very pro-gun state.
We'll have to plan on something like that. Our concern was that most of the vendors probably, like, take off the next day to get home. So they would have to stick around for a couple more days.
But, you know, something we could always do it on a Thursday, try to do it the day before,
sure.
Have people that want to come out early. Hey, guys,
go ahead. I was going to say we'd do just one day.
Yeah,
so.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
All right, guys,
okay,
we unfortunately have to jump. We look forward to having you guys there. Melissa, it was a pleasure meeting you. And
yes, a pleasure meeting you.
We'll see you in a couple of days. And Jim and Kim, you guys have a safe drive. We need you guys
there
in one piece. Yeah. We'll make sure the word is going. Yeah, it's a 2-day drive for us. So we'll see you guys soon. All right?
All right.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.
All right.
Take care.
All right, guys, we're going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we will be live with Matt Morehouse from Backlitz Home Magazine. Talk to you in a few.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238, 866-762-9238, or go to enerfood.com. That's ENERFOOD.com, enerfood.com.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disaster situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just a conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together, even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
Did you know that there were more natural disasters in 2011 than any other year in recorded history? So far, 2012 is on track to beat this record with even more earthquakes, tornadoes, and floods. When disasters and hyperinflation happens, grocery store shelves go empty. People are left without food and are forced to rely on the government. Don't let this happen to you. BuyEmergencyFoods.com offers delicious, ready-made meals from Legacy Premium Food Storage at the best prices available anywhere. Don't be fooled by the more expensive, less convenient, and poorly packaged emergency food storage options out there. Legacy Premium Food Storage meals are vegetarian friendly, taste delicious, and are ready to eat in just minutes. With premium ingredients made in the USA, plus all of these great tasting emergency meals come with a worry-free 25-year shelf life. So if you're worried about food inflation, economic crisis, unemployment, or natural disasters, then don't delay and prepare your family now. Order today and use the promo code E2E and get free shipping and 5% off on every item. Again, go to buyemergencyfoods.com and get prepared today.
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsor. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. This is Bubba Da Vinci, and Colorado Ron, I think, had to run off again real quick, so, but he is on the show. And we are going to be live with Matt Morehouse. He and his wife, Linda, have been writing for Backwoods Home Magazine for a while. They live out in, I think it's California. I'm sorry.
California, yes. You're
right. Oh, hey, Matt. That's right. And we talked to your wife, Linda, when we first launched the show. You guys are the authors of Cast Iron Cuisine. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So, and I remember having the very interesting conversation with Linda back then. You also, if I remember, go ahead and have like a you have a ranch or something that you guys do have your own beef, and you guys were very passionate about making sure that there was no stress on the animals and things like that. Is that correct?
Right, grass-fed beef. We do have a ranch, but we don't run cattle on the ranch. Linda makes arrangements to buy the grass-fed beef from various producers around here in Humboldt County.
Yeah, and you guys, how long have you guys lived up in Northern California?
We've been here about 15 years.
15 years. And where were you guys originally from, Matt?
Well, I was originally from Cleveland, then moved to San Francisco and worked there for 27 years, and then I moved to Lake County, and then I met Linda. She'd lived in Red Bluff for, I don't know, 40 years or so. And then we moved here to Humboldt County.
All right. And how did you guys end up getting involved in Backwoods Home Magazine, out of curiosity?
Well, some years ago, I had an off-grid place in Lake County. And I think it was, when did Backwoods Home get started?
Oh, my goodness, I don't even remember. I don't know the year that they actually got started.
Right. Well, this was back in the 1990s. And that's when I came across Backwoods Home Magazine. And I've been a subscriber pretty much ever since. I might have skipped a few years in there from time to time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so you did you write an article and send it in to them, or?
No, I think I just saw an ad someplace for Backwoods Home Magazine. It sounded interesting to me, so I subscribed to it. And then just recently, within the last few years, after we wrote the cookbook, Linda started writing articles for Backwoods Home.
Okay, well, very interesting. Oh, so you guys actually created the cookbook prior to getting involved with Backwood Home?
No. I had a subscription to Backwoods Home for many years.
No, I meant prior to Linda writing for him.
Yes, yes.
Well, that's very interesting. Okay. Well, I wasn't aware of that. I mean, I never really understood the correlation on how for a lot of them, I find that the books have been written since they've been writing articles for Backwoods Home as opposed to the other way around.
No, this is the other way around. See, I have a publishing company, and we published the book, and then it was a natural to think that Backwoods Home would want to sell the book, and they've been very successful at selling the book for us. So and to promote the book, Linda wrote some articles for Backwoods Home that, based on chapters in the book.
Very cool. Now, some interesting things about you is from what I've read, you're an avid outdoor baker. Now, when I read that, I was kind of curious, and I'm like, well, how much baking can a person really do outdoors? I mean, I'm sure that you obviously can do some, but it doesn't seem like it'd be very efficient. But then I started doing some reading and found out that there's really not much that you can't do outdoors that you can't do indoors.
Right, but that's not the I actually don't do much baking outdoors. There's, like you said, it's difficult to do. I mean, you can do it in a Dutch oven,
mm-hmm.
or you can make just a bannock over, coals on the campfire. But most of the baking that I do is indoors. Well, and then the big green egg, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but I do a lot of baking in the big green egg, and that's outdoors.
No, I'm not. And that was one of the questions I was going to ask you. What is the big green egg? I saw that, and I was kind of like, I'm not quite sure what that is.
It's a... it looks exactly like a big green egg. It's a ceramic container, and the technology for this is thousands of years old. It was first used back in Japan and China, and it's evolved over the years. And now there's it's a completely enclosed, and I use charcoal in it, It's very good because it can hold a temperature. You can adjust the vents on it so you can hold an exact temperature, which makes it very good for baking. If you just put in big green egg, you'll get more information than you want about it.
and so it's basically, I mean, for lack of a better term, it's like a barbecue. I mean, it's a large device that can go ahead and set the temperature.
Right. You build a fire in it. You can do, if you leave the top open, you can grill steaks on it, and it'll not only hold a temperature, but it'll hold a very high temperature. You can get up to 700 degrees in it if you want.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to definitely have to look that up.
Just type in big green egg and you'll be surprised.
So, you've done everything. I mean, I hear you're an avid Harley rider.
Yeah, I have a Road King.
And Jeff from Backwoods Home Magazine also sent me something that said that you actually raced a sailboat.
Yes, we raced my sailboat from San Francisco to Hawaii.
Wow. I mean, that's pretty – how long of a trip is that?
It took us 11 days and 12 hours, something like that.
And is this something that you still do? I mean, obviously living in Northern California in Eureka, you're right there near the coast. So
right on the ocean. No, I sold the sailboat some time ago, and then I went from sailing to off grid property.
Okay. And so you were doing these things before, but you still have your Harley.
Oh yeah.
Okay. And when you say you went to off-grid property, you mean is that something that you do now? Is you sell off-grid property, or you mean you went off-grid yourself?
No, yeah, the ranch that we own is off-grid.
Gotcha. And
but we don't live there. We don't live there year-round. We have a house in the city because the ranch is located at 4,000 feet, and the snow gets pretty heavy in the winter, so we don't use it much in the winter.
Huh. So when you guys are doing things, and now I saw your notes that were talking about want to talk about baking bread, and it was kind of interesting that you sent that to us, because it just seems like this last 30 days there's been a tremendous amount of people online talking about baking bread, and our assumption, we were talking about it earlier, is that because the prices of everything, corn, wheat, all the grains have gone up significantly, people are kind of looking at ways to cut costs, and a lot of people are looking at baking bread at home and things like that. And I have to admit, my wife and I, a year and a half, 2 years ago, decided we were going to go ahead and start making bread at home, and got a bread machine. And that is not that's really not a good experience. I mean, you don't do anything. You basically just throw all the ingredients in the machine and walk away, which is really not baking bread. But your recipe is based on doing everything in an oven scenario, correct?
Right.
Now, do you cook your bread in cast iron?
Yes, we. I mostly use the cast iron loaf pans, which we bought, 5 or 6 years ago. They're expensive, and I think they're about, we checked online, and they vary from $13 to $20 or something like that, but I think the ones we have were $17. But the thing is, you'll never have to buy another bread pan again, and they make great containers if you want to make a meatloaf. They really, they're very versatile pan. Now, another way I bake bread a lot is I use the cast iron skillet, the number 8 Griswold, Grizzy. I call it a Grizzy 8. And the recipe for that is in our book. That's a very simple recipe. In fact, I would suggest that anybody wants to start baking bread at home, that recipe is the way to go.
Now, is it difficult, to cook something like that in a pan and maintain it? I mean, this is my lack of knowledge in this area, so please forgive me. It seems like when I cook with our cast iron, if it's something that has a natural oil base, they're very easy to clean up. They're very easy to do everything with. But if it's something that's dry, that it kind of sucks the moisture out, and I find that it's a little more difficult to clean up, and it sticks a little bit more. So most people, if somebody were to try baking bread in their Grizzy 8 or in one of these pans, is the cleanup significantly harder or more difficult than say doing any other sort of cooking?
No, in fact, there is no cleanup. If you have a properly seasoned pan, the bread pops out and there's no cleanup. I mean, you might wipe it out with a dry towel or something if there's a few crumbs in there, and then put it back in I never even touch it. And the loaf pan's the same way.
Then obviously
it just
pops
right out.
That would go back.
I don't even use any oils in it. I just put it in the dry pan. Well, this is assuming that you have a good conditioned cast iron pan.
Now, so let's kind of go down that avenue before we kind of talk about the recipe and everything else. if someone's getting started and everything else, what is a proper, what is a good way to season the pan so it's at that point?
It depends on what you're starting out with. If you're starting with a new pan, a lot of the new pans that you buy now are pre-seasoned, so you don't have to worry about that. But if you're getting a pan, a skillet or something from a flea market that's got a lot of build-up on it, what I do, and people will say, don't do this, but I've done it for years, and that's the way I do it. I just put it in the wood fire and leave it there overnight, and take it out the next day, and then just I wash it off with water, and usually all the dirt comes right off. And then I dry it, and then I put it, I season it with mineral oil. A lot of people use vegetable oils and everything. But if you use mineral oil, you avoid the rancid problem, because mineral oil won't turn rancid. And I put it in the oven at about 300 degrees and leave it in there for an hour or so, then shut off the oven and let it cool naturally. Get it out, swipe it out with a towel, and you're good to go.
Okay, so mineral. Now, out of curiosity, let's take a step back about putting it into the wood fire and letting it cook through. Is basically what you're doing there is just cooking off any old food or element or anything
right.
that's on there, letting
right.
it get red hot and burn it off.
Yeah, well, you know, it doesn't get red hot. I mean, but
and then,
it just burns it off.
And then what about rust? Because I know,
well,
you know, in people that are because like you're in Northern California up in Eureka,
right.
you guys get a fairly significant amount of rain and there's a lot of moisture in the air.
Right.
I would assume a lot of these old pans that you would find have rust on them. I mean, obviously, if you're conditioning them and it's got oil on them, if you use the mineral oil on there, that'll prevent the rust. But
right.
for ones that you find, throwing them in the wood fire, will that get rid of the rust too?
Not really, but when I would do that first, and then if there's rust on it, just go over it with some steel wool and get off what you can and then oil it. Now, you know, you're going to run into some pans that are beyond repair because they're deeply pitted with rust. And you just throw them away or don't buy them.
Okay. That's interesting. So let's talk about your bread recipe. I mean, it's a fairly basic recipe. And is this recipe that you sent us one that's specifically designed for like the loaf pans and the cast iron, or will this work in any sort of bread pan?
It would work in any sort of bread pan. In fact, it would work in no bread pan. You cook it on a pizza stone. Let me back up a bit here and just give you the basics of bread baking.
Okay, please.
There's only four. Yes? There's only four ingredients that you need to make a good loaf of bread. And the basic ingredients are, number one is flour. And for my basic recipe, I just use the gold medal unbleached white flour. And I've tried a lot of the other designer flours, the expensive flours that sell up to $1 a pound. And yeah, I think they're a waste of money. I could never tell any difference. And then the second ingredient is yeast. And I've been using the instant yeast. And you can save a lot of money if you buy it in bulk instead of those little packages. Those little packages cost about 65 cents a piece. And you can buy it in bulk, and it's very inexpensive. And then you need salt. And some people like to use kosher salt, but I use that occasionally if I feel like it. Mostly I use just the plain old table salt. And salt is very necessary in any yeast bread recipe, because without it, the bread's not going to rise. And then you need water, the fourth ingredient. And again, a lot of people, I see a lot of recipes that call for designer water, spring water or something, but I just use plain old tap water. And with these four simple ingredients, you can make an excellent loaf of bread that is above and beyond anything that you can buy off the shelf in the store. And it's inexpensive. If you do this for less than a dollar a loaf, probably a lot less, I haven't figured it out. And that's it.
You're right, it's a very simple recipe. I mean, four items is very simple. How long will something like this last for a person, you know, for like what's the shelf life of it? Because obviously most people nowadays are used to buying bread off of the store, out of the store, and with all the preservatives and everything else, they have obviously a much longer shelf life, or at least your assumption would be that it would have a much longer shelf life than something like this.
Well, you know, it's surprising. I usually bake two loaves of bread a week for the two of us here, and we usually go through about two loaves a week. And I have a hard time telling the difference between the first time we cut into it and the last piece. And we both like to eat it for breakfast. I'll have three slices for breakfast, and I like to put olive oil on it and a little salt. And Linda likes to make an egg sandwich out of her good free-range eggs. But I've never found a problem with preserving it, probably because it doesn't last long enough to go bad. And we toast it, mostly toast it.
And what about, this is maybe a silly question since you just kind of said that you guys don't keep it very long, is does bread like this freeze very well?
Yeah.
Because I know that
it does. Because sometimes we might have a loaf of bread left and we're going to be gone for a few days or something or a week. I just throw it, I wrap it in plastic and just throw it in the refrigerator, in the freezer. And when we come back, I let it thaw out, slice it, and it seems to me just the same.
Really? Okay, so that's impressive because I've noticed, especially over the last couple of years, when I was younger, it wasn't uncommon for my family, my mom and my grandmother, to freeze bread. But the bread that you buy in stores nowadays, and I'm positive it's the additives, you pull that stuff out of the freezer, and the moisture just makes it a soggy mess. And assuming it's they're just making things so, with such bad ingredients nowadays, it just falls apart.
I couldn't speak to that issue because I haven't bought a loaf of store bought bread for, a long time.
Okay, now let's talk about you have the four ingredients, and you have to start doing things. And when you start doing this, do you use things like mixers and things like that, or do you do everything by hand? And how difficult is it to prep something like this?
Let me go. My next thing here was about the equipment that I use. And, you know, everybody has their different ways of doing things. I use a KitchenAid mixer, and I've used it for, I must have had this thing for 20 years or more. I keep wishing it wear out so I could get a new one. But a KitchenAid mixer with a dough hook and a paddle. And you really don't need that. You can do it all by hand, but this really makes the job easier. And then I have a nice ceramic bowl that I use to let the bread rise in. And I have the baking pans, which we already talked about. But you can use anything for a baking pan. You can get the 99-cent specials from the drugstore. And I've used those, and I've used everything up to those expensive double-sided Teflon-coated ones. But the cast iron is the way to go. And let's see, what else? Now, you don't even need a bread pan. I mean, like I said before, you can easily cook a loaf or two of bread on a pizza stone. And sometimes I do that. And also I mentioned about cooking it in the Grizzy 8. And then you need an accurate oven. In the oven that we have here, I have a bread-proof setting on the oven, and it holds at 100 degrees. And although I've been told that 86 degrees is perfect, but really any warm place, not hot, will do. A sunny window out of the draft is a good alternative. And to bake the bread, I have an electric, it's electric convection oven, and I set it at 375. But again, just about any oven that will hold a reasonably accurate temperature will do.
Okay. Now, I'm going. I'm sorry.
And the next thing is an instant read thermometer. And this is really essential for checking the temperature of the water when mixing with instant yeast. It should be between 126 and 130 degrees. And also you need it to check the doneness of the final product. The white bread, the internal temperature of white bread should be about 190 to 195 degrees. And for the mixed grain breads, the whole wheats and so forth, should be a little hotter, around 200 to 210. And I know the old saying about thumping the bottom of the loaf to see if it's done, that's not really accurate at all. And it's so simple to just stick in an instant read thermometer. Because you want to get your loaves done properly so it will have a nice crust. Otherwise, they're doughy and not very good. And then I use another thing I use is a 10-ounce spritzer bottle that I fill with water, and I throw in 2 or 3 tablespoons of white vinegar. And I use that to spritz water into the oven while the bread bakes. This seems to build the crust. And also, I spritz the loaves before they go in the oven, and before I sprinkle on toppings, I like to use sesame seeds as a topping and a little salt. It makes lets them adhere to the bread, to the loaf better.
Okay. And now, let me ask you a quick question. Let me interrupt you. An instant read thermometer, is that an electric thermometer, or are there instant read thermometers that are just are non-electric?
Easy. Either way. You can buy them either way. I think I have one that's not electric. You just—I don't know—they cost $10 or $12 or something. But they also have electronic ones that work off a little hearing aid battery or something, and they're a little more expensive. But
okay, I just wanted to make sure that there were thermometers that were, you know, obviously on the show we try to gear towards being more self-reliant and getting things that need batteries or lots of care. We try to stay away from. So I was just curious if what you were using, you know, if there was a instant read thermometer, easy read thermometer that was non-electric. So okay, that's good.
Sure.
So
you can buy them. They're readily available just about any hardware store or even grocery stores carry them, and so they're very easy to get. I'd say maybe $8 to $12. I don't know.
Okay. Wonderful. And now the other question I have is why white vinegar? I mean, is it the flavor for you, or is vinegar some sort of activator for creating the crust? I've never read that before.
Right. I started doing that, I don't know, a few years ago, and I'm not really sure why I do it. I don't think it seems to give it a little more flavor. And also it seems to set the crust a little better, but I really don't have any scientific evidence of it or anything. It's just more or less a thing I do.
Okay. Now you had a bunch of some tips here on when they're baking bread. Can you run through those for us?
Okay. Now, you know, most of the recipes, if you look in any cookbook, will call for 2 risings. And I use 3. The first is only 10 to 20 minutes after all the ingredients have been mixed in the mixer with the paddle. And I put a piece of plastic wrap over the mixing bowl and a towel on top of that and put it in the warm spot. And after that, I pull it out and I use the dough hook to clean, to start the kneading process, and it cleans the sides of the mixer and comes out with a nice dough ball. And then I put that on the surface and knead it to the proper consistency. And you don't want to knead it too much. You just want to get it to that point where it feels good and it'll spring back to your touch. But don't over knead it. And then I let it rise in the ceramic bowl for 20 to 25 minutes, again, under plastic and a towel in the warm place. And then I pull it when, after it comes out of there, I knead it again and form it into a big ball and cut that big ball in half and form it into two loaves and put it in the cast iron pans. Put that back in the warm spot for 20 to 25 minutes. And then after that, I pull it out, heat the oven to 375, and put it back. And then I cut the slice the tops of the loaves three places. And that's so the loaf can expand and it won't break at the sides and make an ugly loaf. And then I spray it with the water, and I sprinkle on, I like to use sesame seeds. It gives it a nice nutty flavor. And a little salt, and then put it in the oven. And I have a light in the oven, and I like to look in there and watch it rise. And every once in a while, I'll open the door and spritz in a little water. And that spritzing in the water seems to really help the crust develop. You get a nice, crusty bread. And that's pretty much it. Now, when you come out, I always check it. I leave it cook for 33, 35 minutes, and then I check it with the thermometer. And if it's the right temperature, I bring it out. And the cast iron, all you have to do is turn the cast iron thing, and it pops right out. Now, sometimes you might have to run a knife around the sides or something, but usually it'll just flop right out. And I let it cool on a wire rack. I usually throw a towel over it. And you want to let it cool for about 20 minutes. I know that a lot of times people are standing right there, and they just want to cut off a chunk and slather some butter on it and start eating it. But it's a lot better if you let it cool for about 20 minutes. It gets rid of the, if you cut it right away, it's sometimes really doughy on the inside. It'll taste great, but let it sit for 10 to 20 minutes. You're going to have a much better loaf overall. And that's about it. It seems time consuming, but the actual time that you're working is, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes. And the whole deal takes maybe 2 hours from the time you start to the time you have bread coming out of the oven. It's not something that you can, like a crock pot, where you can go away, so you have to sort of hang around. But there's not a lot of work in baking bread.
Now, Matt, we have to jump to a quick commercial break. But when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about the next edition of your cookbook, and you were nice enough to send us a recipe that will be in your next cookbook. So let's go over the recipe and give that to the people that are listening, and then talk a little bit more about what will be in your cookbook. Is that okay?
Okay, I'll stand by.
Okay, so let's go ahead and go to commercial break, guys. We'll be back after 4 ads.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
If everything you eat comes out of boxes stored in your freezer, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo. If you're afraid to take out your own garbage because the neighbor kids might beat you up, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
Over 50 free training classes are coming to the Self-Reliance Expo at the Hickory Convention Center Friday, September 14th and Saturday, September 15th. gardening, alternative home building, off-grid living, food preservation, cooking with the sun, self-defense classes, canine demos, and more.
If you can kill a houseplant just by looking at it, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
This event is fun for the whole family and is the largest of its kind in the nation. Learn how to do it yourself. Learn how to defend yourself. Save money, save a life.
If the only screwdriver you own is made of orange juice and vodka, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
It's the Self-Reliance Expo at the Hickory Convention Center, Friday, September 14th and Saturday, September 15th. Go to selfrelianceexpo.com for information and tickets.
Hi, this is J. Stephen Stoller for Backwoods Home Magazine. If you like the program you're listening to right now, consider subscribing to Backwoods Home Magazine. Call 1-800-835-2418 or go to www.backwoodshome.com and click on the subscribe button. Every issue of Backwoods Home Magazine is over 100 pages, packed with solid self-reliance advice by experts who tell you how to survive in these unpredictable times. Call 1-800-835-2418.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disaster situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just a conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specifications in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They are the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I like them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour, and I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast, and I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, it's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours, too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com. And Wonder Mill Grain Grinders. Get yours today. Tell them that Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
Thanks for listening to A Word from Our Sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. This is Bubba Da Vinci. And we are live with Matt Morehouse. He and his wife, Linda, are the authors of Cast Iron Cuisine, From Breakfast to Dessert. And we were talking about baking bread right before we went to the commercial break. Welcome back, Matt.
I'm here.
All right. And we were going to Matt was nice enough to send us a recipe from his new book, when is the new book coming out, Matt?
Well, this recipe will be in the next edition of our present book. The new book, we're only about one-third of the way finished with writing it, so it could be a while before that hits the streets.
Okay, so you're putting out a new edition of the Cast Iron Cuisine in which this
right.
recipe will be in. Got
right.
you. It's okay, I misunderstood.
Okay.
Would you like me please
go into the recipe?
Yes, please.
Okay. Now this is the recipe that I've been using for the past 6 months or so for our daily bread. And I like this in the morning. I think I said that I usually have three slices with olive oil and a little salt. But anyway, here's what goes into it. I use 3.5 cups of gold medal unbleached white flour. I use 2.5 cups of spelt flour. I use 1/2 cup of wheat bran. 3 tablespoons of sesame seed. 1 tablespoon instant yeast. And 1 tablespoon of salt. You use kosher salt or table salt. 2 cups of water at between 125 and 130 degrees. Use that instant thermometer. And 1/4 cup of olive oil. And you can just, like I said, I use three risings, but most recipes call for 2. And just follow any bread recipe. I mean, any method of baking the bread. I don't want to go through all the, you know, kneads and the second kneading and then the third and all that. I think I covered that previously.
Right.
And I cook that in the cast iron pans, and it just makes really excellent toast in the morning and also good sandwich bread. And you can do that whole thing for, I don't know, probably less than $1 a loaf. And it will be comparable to any of the artisan breads that you buy in the store at $3.50 to $5 a loaf.
Now let me ask you, what is spelt flour? I haven't seen that before.
Spelt is an ancient grain, I guess they call it. I really don't know. It's like a whole wheat. It's a more intense flavor than whole wheat. And it's supposed to be real healthy and all that stuff. But we buy it I buy it in bulk at the Winco here in Eureka. And if you buy it, I know in some of the fancier stores, they charge quite a bit for spelt flour. Why, I don't know. I guess they don't grow much of it. But at the Winco, in the bulk section, it's a little over $1 a pound. But you're not using that much of it, so it goes a long way.
Okay, and do you know if it's readily available in regular stores?
Yeah, I would think that it's probably available in any store if you look under the flour section. If you can't get spelt, you can substitute whole wheat flour.
Okay, I'll have to look that up. I've never actually seen spelt, you know, in a section before, but I've never actually looked for it either. So
right, it's spelled S-P-E-L-T.
Okay, and like you said, this bread that you just gave us the recipe for, you're saying that this stores very easily inside a freezer, you know, and comes out.
Oh yeah, it freezes very, very good.
Okay.
And it just makes excellent toast. It's got a nice texture. It's got a very nutty, nutty flavor.
Okay. And is, you know, it looks like spelt. It's kind of a, so when you're using wheat bran and everything else, is this kind of a more textured bread?
Right. It gives it some, like I like to say, it gives it a little tooth, and it gives it some flavor, some really nice flavor.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, I'm going to probably give this a try this weekend. I mean, if I can find spelt flour, I've got all the other ingredients. It's a real basic recipe, and seems
yeah,
like it would be very easy.
If you can't get the spelt, use old wheat flour if you can't get spelt. But where are you located?
I'm out in Iowa.
Nowhere.
You should be able to get spelt flour in Iowa.
You would think. You would definitely think.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know something. I appreciate you coming on, Matt, and giving us this recipe and kind of running through the bread recipe and the your cookbook. again, is the Cast Iron Cuisine from Breakfast to Dessert, and you and Linda did this. Now, is it available on – I actually haven't checked. I know it's available from Backwoods Home Magazine. You can go to Backwoods Home Magazine and click on books, and it's listed there. Is it also available on Amazon?
It's available anywhere books are sold. And if I could, it's also available from the publisher. And you can buy it direct from the publisher at www.paracay.com, P-A-R-A-C-A-Y.com. That's my publishing company. My son's actually runs the day-to-day operations, but we own the company jointly.
Oh, okay.
And I would encourage anybody to go to that website, because although we're mostly books about sailing, there are a lot of books about self-sufficiency on there. We've got over 4,000 books on that site.
Okay, so I didn't realize you actually own the public. When you said it was your publishing company, I was assuming that you meant the one that you worked with, but it's actually your publishing company.
Right, I actually own the company.
Got you. Okay. I actually
own half the company.
Okay, I just went to it. So it looks like originally it might have been a sailing, where you did a lot of sailing books,
right,
and things like that.
Right. And you know, I might just say at this time, I mentioned before that I sailed, done a lot of sailing, offshore sailing, and there's no more self-sufficient people and preparedness-minded people than the offshore sailor. When you're outside, maybe 1,000 miles offshore, you have no choice but to be self-sufficient. And that's why I always thought that the preparedness and sailing, they really go together. And I always thought the Backwoods Home magazine could be marketed to sailors. Now, That's a tip at no charge from a publisher.
Well, I'll pass that on to Dave.
Pass it on to Dave.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I'm going to have to look through here because, you know, we should have a conversation about this sometime, which is I've always wanted to build a strip canoe. I don't think anybody does them anymore. But, I mean, when I was a kid, that was always something that I wanted to do was build an old strip canoe.
There's books on it in there.
Oh, on the website, I'll have to go to it. It always seemed like a daunting task as a kid, but it seems like something that I think I'd have a lot of fun with as an adult.
That's just what you need, Bubba, is another project.
Yeah,
that's true. That's right. Well, thank you very much, Matt. And as Matt said, www.paracay.com is the website. You can purchase any of the books that are on there, but you can Matt and Linda, Cast Iron Cuisine from Breakfast to Dessert. Awesome book. Thank you very much for being on, Matt.
Okay, thank you guys very much.
All right,
bye.
Take care.
Bye.
All right. So how did your daughter do?
Did well. She did well.
Now, we didn't mention it earlier, but one of the things that Colorado Ron was out doing today is his daughter, who is a tremendous athlete, was out running today. Cross country or
cross country. Yeah, she gets it from her mom though. Just so everybody knows.
and she gets her sense of humor from her dad. So. She's a little bit sarcastic sometimes, but it's okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if that's from being a teenager or whatever, but, yeah, it's no different than most. So I'm glad – I'm glad she did well. How'd she place?
Well, the times are still coming in, so people are still – because it's all time, so we'll wait till the end to find out.
Very cool. So very interesting day. I mean, yeah, here's the thing is now you're – we were just talking to Matt about – doing the bread, and now your wife cooks bread daily. I assume because you have your household. If you had to buy it, you'd have to take out stock in Wonder Bread because you got
family. Yeah, she makes tremendous bread. I mean, we always have people asking us for bread. So yeah, it must be good.
Does she do it this way? Does she do it the old fashioned way, or is she a bread maker person?
Nope. She does it the old fashioned way. So yeah, she doesn't use the bread machines or anything like that.
So, I mean, I found it very interesting. I was, you know, he gave us this recipe and everything else, and I didn't realize how simple the ingredients were. I mean, it looks fairly simple, but I wonder why more.
It's pretty easy, and I believe we're going to even have some bread making classes at the expo if you've got time to just sit around
I have time to just sit around. Well, here's the thing: I'll be interested to see, because for those of you guys who don't know, typically at one of our Self-Reliance Expos, we usually have 2 to 3 stages, and we go ahead and plan all of them. Now, at this event, you worked with a different group who took over our second stage. What is the name of the group?
It's the Carolina Readiness, and it's owned by Jan and her husband, and Jan really is the one that she had a bunch of contacts, and she said, you know, we'd like to help put on a bunch of classes. I said, you know, why don't you take care of stage number 2, and you get that filled with a bunch of classes, and we'll just handle stage number 1. And so that's how that worked out.
And they did. They booked a ton of classes. Well, a ton. I mean, as many as they could probably get in during that time that we gave them.
I'm pretty excited about that we have never done before is a meat canning class.
Do you happen to have your list of the classes they're going to be doing there?
I don't. Sorry, I'm mobile today. I don't have it with me.
Well, that's fine. I mean, I was trying to remember because I mean there was meat canning, there was the bread making. I think there was. Another herb class, which is different than the one that we normally have there. I don't remember all the ones that were supposed to be there.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. And then we actually set up another area where we have training classes going on, and that's where Dr. Bones and their senior are doing their suture class, and they're sharing that area with another guy who does edible foraging. And so he's going to teach people how to forage for edible plants and things like that in the Carolina area. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, now have you told Doc Bones and Nurse Amy that so they know that they're sharing the space?
No.
We may want to do that so that way they can get that organized. But we'll have to do that. Well, I mean, they're busy. They're busy right now at the other expo, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't call them now and tell them.
Interrupt what they're doing.
Yeah,
so,
I know you're at another expo right now, but just so you know, really stress them out.
I'm very interested in finding out how this all pans out because I mean there is like a ton of expos that have just been popping up. I mean it's just like and like I said earlier, I was being completely genuine earlier when I said that. We're happy that there are multiple expos that are going on out there because, you know, there's no way that we can cover all the areas.
Right.
And we hope that obviously you want them to be successful because you don't want people to think that this is a dying trend already. But, you know, it's amazing that we're looking at in this market I didn't get a chance to mention it earlier. I had it in my notes to mention it. You know, this is National Preparedness Month.
Yep.
I mean, that's how big this has grown that they've actually named this a Preparedness Month.
Well, you know, and it's funny because I actually got a call yesterday from a gentleman that lives in Louisiana that came to our expo, and you know, he said that he was very thankful that that he came to the expo because, you know, he didn't have power for over almost a week and was just fine. In 2010, he said he'd have been in trouble, but now he said he was just fine. And life went on just hunky-dory.
Well, and that's like I said, we're if you've ever been to one of our events, or if you haven't, we have a massive amount of training. And, you know, I was very thankful that we had just had one in Texas because it was an amazing surprise that almost to the day, the anniversary of Katrina, that they had another major storm go through and all that flooding and all of that stuff all over again.
Yep. And, exactly.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, they were those people were out of power for almost 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, you know, and the fact that he said he wouldn't have been able to make it 24 hours before, unless he just, you know, sat there and starved or sat in the dark. But he said this time, you know, life went on and there was hardly any hiccups.
Well, that's very, you know, when we get those kind of messages, you know, it's always makes me feel good. Because, you know, that's what we're trying to do, is make life a little bit easier for everybody. So, hey, let's kind of, you know, before we're going to end this show a little bit early today, guys, not much, but a little bit early because we got to get ready to get going for this this expo. But, you know, I wanted to go through the speakers that we're going to be having on the main stage and make a couple of announcements there. And then, you know, also a couple of key things that are going to be happening at the event. One of the things is that Doomsday Preppers will be doing a last casting call at this event. The very sought after Brooklyn from Doomsday Preppers will be out there doing a casting call. It's kind of funny when I put out there that on Facebook that they were going to be out there, I had like six people ask if Brooklyn was going to be there. So although I have never met her in person, I know you have. Apparently she's a very pretty girl that everybody wants to see because, yeah, that wasn't like, oh, back with Home Preppers. It was all, ooh, is Brooklyn going to be there?
Yeah, she's making quite a name for herself.
Yeah, apparently we're going to be we're going to become a matchmaking service for preppers here very soon. It's ridiculous. So, additionally, you know, we're very happy. We Southern Prepper One debuted his show last week, and guess what? He shot to number one.
Isn't that crazy?
We've been displaced by Southern Prepper by SP1.
That's just not right.
No, it's not right. Yeah, I think
Steve is fudging the numbers to keep us motivated.
Yeah, I think so too. But you know something, congratulations to Southern Prepper One for his new show and doing so well. Yeah, what's the old saying? Beginner's luck. You know, but,
yeah, there you go.
so Southern Prepper One, if you're out there and you're listening. Yeah, congratulations. We're glad that you made it, but we truly believe it's beginner's luck. So, you know, when you come out there and you can 3 weeks in a row, you knock us out of the number one slot, then that'll be huge. And you know, number two is he will also be at the event. I don't have a speaking time yet. I know he will be, and here's one of the second announcement is Jack Spearco from the Survival Podcast, good friend of ours, will be doing be speaking at the event. He's one of our keynote speakers. He's speaking on Friday from 11:30 to 1, and he's speaking on Saturday from 9:30 to 11. And he's also on Saturday doing a meet and greet. So that meet and greet will be from 8:30 in the morning until opening. So you basically get to come in a half hour early, and he's got, if you go to his Facebook page, she has the listing of the people who are going to be up there on stage with them answering questions. Colorado Ron will be one of them.
Yeah.
No, I will not be one of them because someone actually has to do the work. So, just Jesus. So, but no, yeah, you go.
Somebody's got to be the pretty face of the expo.
There you go. And Southern Prepper One will be one of the people that are there. So you could come, if you have a chance to come down, come see Southern Prepper One, come see Jack Spearco and everybody else. Additionally, Friday from 1 o'clock until 2:30, we'll have Jeff Foster speaking on preparedness of, by, and for your kids. And then we have Connie Nielsen, who will be speaking on sprouts as an essential part of your food storage. We will have Mark Price from Noah's Pantry speaking on preparedness, not prescaredness. Now, I like the title of that.
That's catchy. I like that.
Yeah, that is catchy. Yeah, I thought so too. I think it sounds like a topic you should be talking about at Halloween. And and then one of our other hosts, Sylvia Britton, we'll be talking on stage, Everyday Preps for Everyday People. Again, another catchy name. Everybody's coming up with such clever names. I like it.
Yeah.
And then a very interesting topic. Guys, if you cannot make it out for anything else on Friday, I think this is going to be an interesting, interesting topic. Adam Francis will be speaking on active shooter awareness. That's really cool. And basically what he's – active shooter, he's talking about being in one of these situations where you actually have an active shooter out there and what you need to do to protect and defend yourself and make sure you can get to cover and concealment, et cetera, et cetera. So,
step number one.
That's right. Yeah, you could actually probably get the entire expo behind Bubba and putting on a few pounds. But and then on Saturday, we will start off the day at 9:30 in the morning with Modern Survival Philosophy with Jack Spearco. And then Doc Bones and Nurse Amy will be doing their survival medicine when help is not on the way. We have another one of our show hosts, Vicki Haycraft. Love Vicki Lynn. Vicki Lynn is just always a wonderful, courteous person. And she'll be talking about working smarter, not harder, tips for preppers with disabilities. And you know something? One of the things I like about our show is we are always covering things that people aren't. I mean, if you look at Jeff Foster with talking about prepping with kids, you look at Connie with making sure you have sprouts in there. You've got Mark talking about not being scared about things. You've got Adam Francis with active shooter. Now you've got you got Joe and Amy with what do you do when you don't have hospitals, but preppers with disabilities. What a great topic. Vicki Lynn, good for you. I mean, glad to hear that you're covering something like that. Then at 13:30, 1:30 for you non-military people, we have William Forestchin, author of 1 Second After, that will be coming out there and talking about EMP and talking about some of the topics from his book. Very, very so he's one of our keynote speakers also. Very interesting. Then we have Donna Miller, another one of our show hosts, that will be doing Food Storage 101. Preparing your children for school emergencies with Donald Green. Now, that's a little bit different than the other topic, but we have two people that are talking about prepping with your kids. I like the idea of making sure your kids know what to do when there's an emergency when they're at school. For those of you guys who aren't homeschooling like us, a lot of people don't think about what happens when you're not around your kids. I mean, I'm fairly confident that if the kids are home, we're fairly prepared. But what are you teaching your kids for when they're not at home and they're in school? So Donald Green will be talking about that topic. We have an entire group that'll be coming in and talking about how to plan effectively. long range hunting. That's at 1630 to 1730. And then 1730 to 1830, which is 530 to 630, we have our old friend, Dr. David Christopher, that will be talking about self-reliant health, health through knowledge and truth. And he, I don't know if he'll have it this time, but they usually have a great program. It's their, it's a internet program that's like $100 that my wife ended up taking, and she thoroughly enjoyed going through it, learned a lot. So they usually do that at the show. I hope they do it at this show. It'll be very, very good. So, I mean, that's just our stage. And then we've got obviously Appleseed doing their thing over at their booth. We talked to Kim and Jim earlier with Melissa, and I'm very, very curious to see what that camp looks like.
Yeah, me too. That'll be pretty cool.
Yeah, so we got a lot going on. Hey guys, I mean, pass the information along. We hope to see you guys in North Carolina, because this is looking to be a very, very, very well thought out and education heavy show.
I agree. I mean, we're going to have lots of training classes, and between the two stages and the additional training area, I mean, it's all training. With vendors in between, but man, it's going to be, and that's the other good thing is, you know, all the vendors that support the event, you know, they always give discounts as well. They always have show specials and things like that, so that always helps. You know, you come down, not only do you learn how to use different products, but you can also get them at a pretty good price.
Yep. All right. So, do you have anything else there, Colorado, before you go out there and go back to watching your daughter?
Well, just a couple of things. Did you go over the Homestead Hunter?
Oh my goodness, totally forgot about that. Let's go ahead and do that real quick.
Okay. I did the opposite this time. It seems like I always kind of go south and east and went to Missouri and checked out Iowa. So this time I thought, you know, what are some of the most beautiful places in the country? And Quarter Lane, Idaho was one of the places that I thought was just beautiful. So I started searching for those, for something up in there. And if you go, again, go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/ColoradoRonPage, you will see it. But it's this one was very interesting. This house is completely off-grid already. And that's what made this one interesting. You know, most of them are farmhouses, and you still have, you know, quite a bit to do to them. This one was off the grid, has solar panels, has with a propane generator backup system that's also doubles as a welder. It has water. It's got septic. It's got, I mean, this thing is set up and ready to go. And if I remember right, it was 10 acres, and it was up just outside of Quarter Lane. Took about 20 minutes to get to Quarter Lane, I believe, from here. And it was priced at $117,000.
Yeah, $117,000. And it is. It's
oh, and it
acres.
Had a creek going through it. Not a seasonal, a year-round creek going right through the property.
Yeah, and it's butted up against state land. So it's it says, although the property is remote, it's close to all services, and the property also has a small orchard, garden area, pond, shop storage, and a carport. So,
right.
I mean, it's actually got quite a bit. It is a little house. It's a three-bedroom,
yep.
But it's not very big. But it's still a heck of a place for $117,500 is what they're asking.
So that's a pretty smoking deal, I thought, especially up there just outside of Quarter Lane. Because, you know, remember, you're surrounded by national forest up there. There should be plenty of hunting, plenty to do, plenty of winter sports, snowmobiling, all that stuff. And then to have a running creek, year-round running creek through the property is just amazing.
Yeah, and it's a fairly nice piece of property. So good find, Colorado.
Thanks. And then next, obviously, is Project Hoth, which is the truck that I bought, I don't know, what has it been, about a month now? basically, I've been working on it. It's a 77 crew cab, short bed, four-wheel drive. So one of the things I wanted to do was, you remember that one of the vendors in Arlington built axes and tomahawks. And so he had one of these rescue axes that was designed to cut through metal, you know, and all that stuff. So I grabbed one of those and I hard-mounted it to the pillar in the middle pillar between the front seat and the back seat, so that it could be accessed by either seat. And then I also removed the factory front bumper, and believe it or not, I found on Craigslist a bumper that I was able to trade for, and I had like $100 into this bumper, I think, by the time I traded it down. And so I got this winch bumper, and I already had a winch sitting in the shop, so I mounted that and got that all on. So
very
now
cool.
I got a winch on the front and slowly getting it built.
And he's not talking about, you know, it's not winch, it's winch.
Winch, W-I-M-C-H.
Yeah. All right. All right. Well, that's it for this week. Tell your daughter good luck for me if she has any more runs today.
Okay. Sounds good.
And you have safe travels. And everybody, we will not be on next week. There will be a best of because we will be at the Self-Reliance Expo, which is in Hickory, North Carolina, September 14th and 15th. And we hope to see you all there.
That might give David a chance to keep up.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I mean, he should be at the show, too, so I don't know if he'll be broadcasting next Friday either. And if he does, it makes us look even worse, but that's okay. He's from there. He's from that area, so that makes it a little bit different. All right, guys, from Bubba Da Vinci and Colorado Ron, you've been listening to Self-Reliance Exposed from Backwoods Home Magazine. We will talk to you in 2 weeks. Take care.
You've been listening to BHM Radio, the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine on the Preparedness Radio Network. Tune in every other week at this time to get more information on the articles you love. Questions or comments for the hosts? Email them at coloradoron@gmail.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Layman Irvin here for Layman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Layman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Layman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
Yeah?
Do you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Well, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, it rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson, and it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
Well, I hope not. Now, get your supplies organized and meet me down the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail at sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the Freeze Dry Guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com. You've been listening to the Preparedness Radio Network, offering helpful and timely tips on preparing for natural and man-made disasters. timely and useful tips on gardening and homesteading. Check us out online at BePreparedRadio.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.